welcome to the next step. Hey, this is Father Voskin, a priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to the next step, the 100th episode of the next step, a podcast dedicated to looking at life, inspecting the very fabric of our being, and doing it all through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. The next step is part of the expanding vision of the Inishu's mission and is brought to you by the cool folks over at apostle.net. Apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. Yes, you heard right, the 100th episode. We are running, we are walking, doesn't matter what you're doing right now. Even if you're crawling, you're here at episode number 100. And I know it's just another episode, but there's something about those numbers, isn't there? You know, I once heard that Steve Wozniak, I believe he played, well, this is going back like about 20 years ago when the Lotto was just coming out in California. Steve Wozniak, of course, co-inventor of Apple Computer, made a commercial for the lottery, and he said that every week he played religiously numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So the first six consecutive numbers. And you think about it and you say, well, those numbers will never come up. Well, they don't come up because actually not too many numbers do come up. What's the odds of playing the lottery? I think it's the same whether you play or not. Well, anyway, I mean, the point is that there's an equal chance of those six numbers coming up as well as any other combination of six numbers. The same chances are there. But there's something about, well, about those round numbers, about cool numbers, about sequences. And certainly when you get to episode 100, it is time for celebration. Well, between us over here in the studio, between Susie, Ken, and Ani and myself, we're high-fiving each other. I know it's kind of like traditional Armenians. We have the big BH. You know, no, I'm not talking about Borçamud. We're talking about the Barahantes. You have a big dinner dance and you celebrate. Well, we haven't done that yet, but you know what? It is kind of exciting. You know, for 100 consecutive weeks, every week, on the dot, we've been producing this next step, and we're just really excited that we're here today. God has given us this opportunity to be together today for this 100th episode, and even more important, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're joining us. And whether this is your first step with us, if you've been crawling, walking with us, or if you've been running with us, if you've been on board since the beginning, just welcome. It's going to be a great show today, as they all are. You know that. You know we put together a really good show. And so today has to be a good show if we put it together, right? Anyway, it works something like that. We're going to be looking at prayer. Today happens to be the National Day of Prayer. What does that mean, national? What does it mean, Day of Prayer? Is there such a thing in the life of a Christian? What about in the context of Armodoxy in ancient Christianity? What does that mean? We're going to look at some of the qualifiers as well. Some interesting things happen. How about an atheist inside of a Christian church? Actually, that's coming up in a couple weeks. We have invited an atheist to come and speak in an Armenian church. And that's not an issue for me, but all of a sudden it's gotten such incredible backlash. I'm going to share that one with you too. I'm going to be sharing some thoughts about the old men's club too. You know, last week we alluded to it. I got to tell you, April just came and went so fast. It was almost like a whirlwind in my life. It started off with Holy Week. If you remember, the beginning of April was Holy Week. We had Easter Sunday on April 4th. Immediately, we took off to Argentina. We even did a podcast from Argentina, came back, and started starting to do the series of lectures within the universities and the colleges for the commemoration of Armenian Genocide Week. And then I had this, well, I told you, this necessary evil. I had to sit through 4 days of meetings. And it gave me an idea to think about some ideas, you know, because when you sit through meetings, your mind wanders unless there's something good out there on, you know, on the agenda, which, well, let me just say it this way. My mind did wander. And I thought about the old men's club. I want to talk to you about the idea of the old men's club, too, as well today. And, you know, all of these ideas, when I said, like, it's been a whirlwind trip throughout April, I've been blogging all of this. I've been writing these down. I've got notes and collections. But I failed to... I think I just realized this and during the last couple weeks, that this podcast, the next step, and rightly so, it's being placed on a blog because it happens to be an audio blog. That's what this last 100 episodes have been about. You've given me a chance to really share some ideas that come from the front lines working in an ancient church. And we call this Armadoxy for a unique reason, for the unique purpose. You know, it's not the Armenian Church we're representing here. We're representing the faith of the Armenian Church, Armenian Orthodoxy. What would that faith be, less all of the politics, less all of the meetings, and less all of the things, the trappings, let's say, that prevent you from really doing the work? And so this has really evolved into something we never imagined back when we started 100 episodes ago. It's turned into, well, this Armadoxy, this idea that there is a faith. It is a pure faith given to us by Jesus Christ, the incarnation of love, and we have an opportunity to react to it. We have an opportunity to say yes to it, to accept it, and make it a principle of life. A couple weeks ago when I was in Argentina, I ran into a young man just full of compassion, full of, well, passion for what he did. He was just a very young, caring, loving young man. And I turned to him in a very casual conversation. I said, "Have you ever thought about being a priest? Because I, for one, know that we are lacking priests who have a passion for the gospel message." Not the Bible, the message that's there. And this young man turned to me, and very honestly, he said, "No, I don't think I could be a priest." And I said, "Well, what makes you say so certainly, with such certainty, that you don't want to be a priest, or you can't be a priest?" And he says, "Well, because there are certain things that I don't believe in." He says, "For instance, I don't believe that people who are not Christian will end up going to hell." I says, "Really?" I says, "What else don't you believe?" And he says, "Well, I don't believe that people who don't see life the way I do are condemned by a God that I understand one way and they may understand in a different way." I said, "You really believe this stuff?" And he goes, "Yes, I do." He says, "There's a lot of things that I don't believe that have been taught to me from the church." And I said, "You know, you sound very much like my boss." And I said, "You know, if my boss was sitting right next to you, I don't think he'd argue with you." And he said, "Oh, you mean your bishop in America?" And I said, no, one step higher than him." And he goes, "Oh, you mean the Catholicos in Armenia?" I go, "Oh, sorry, one more step higher." Of course, I'm talking about Jesus. I said, "Can you imagine Jesus sitting next to you and really looking at you and saying, 'No, you're wrong. Sorry. Most of the world is going to be condemned. Most of my creations are going to hell because they don't happen to believe in a small group of ideas that a small group of people have adopted.'" Now, this is not what Jesus is about. We need to start talking about compassion. We need to start talking about love, manifestations of love, because Jesus is love incarnate. The Gospels teach us that. St. John the Evangelist taught us that. And we've been taught this throughout Armadoxy. The manifestation of love is our ability to take that love and apply it to the different aspects of our lives. To have that passion, to have compassion that comes from deep down and really touch people in a very unique way. We're going to be looking at all of this in a few minutes. But as every week we do, also today, I'm going to start off today with the song of the day. And I've picked out a good one. It's actually a traditional song. I don't do too many traditional songs here on this podcast, but we're going to be listening to Sari Sirun Yar, performed by Zulal, because here in California, Southern California, it is just the most clearest, beautiful day, and there's such a neat breeze. And I was thinking about National Day of Prayer. This is an unusual way of approaching prayer, but think about it for a moment. Here's Zulal. Hazar Nazov, Hazar Nazor, Hazar Nazovia, 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 Hazar
Azar mitzaki, meches metzatze, zakan zorero, mazer tatze, zakan zorero, mazer tatze, mazerit puiro, ervitze gali, zepura beru. Sari Sirunya, Sari Mechatech, Ach Change Mechak, Siro Karabe, Sari Tsegali, Se Sarvi Jura, Sarvi Jura, Beru Meyar, Beru Meyar, Pui Nuham Puira, Beru Meyar, Pui Nuham Puira, Ashotegara,
there are certain days where you just can't get enough of this group. That is Zulal, and available, that's off of their first album, Sare Sirun Yar. Their music is available wherever good music is sold. And of course, if they don't have it, then you know they're not selling good music, right? Zulal, Z-U-L-A-L is the name of the group. Now, I picked out that song, Sare Sirun Yar, for a specific reason. This happens to be National Day of Prayer. Now, obviously, that was not a prayer. Well, it's not a prayer in the traditional sense. But it is a prayer when you think about the broad sense of what prayer should be. It's a dream. It's clarity. It's beauty that comes to you. You know, many times we have this very distorted idea of what prayer is all about. We call it a conversation with God, but we fail to understand what that conversation is about. I mean, conversation with God is such a beautiful and broad explanation of prayer. I mean, I would love to have this conversation with somebody who cares for me, who has compassion, who has unconditional love for me. No matter what I do, is always going to love me. That's an incredible conversation that you could be engaged in. But I want to challenge you to really think about, what is that conversation about? Most of the time, we approach that conversation in the sense of, well, in the conversation that we have around Christmas time with Santa Claus, right? Isn't God become like our heavenly Santa Claus? We have a list of demands and we want God to take care of those demands. okay, it's not a bicycle, it's not the latest Barbie doll, but what it is, are equally important to us, right? God, something's wrong. I've been attacked by a cancer. God, take care of it. God, my relationship is not going well. Can you take care of it? Deal with it. Get things back to normal. And if it's not like a Santa Claus, we approach him like a Superman. The celestial Superman that could come down from heaven, take care of the things, and then leave us alone. Go back. Go back to where you came from. And unfortunately, this has really become our idea of what conversation with God is all about. And I'm not talking about worship. I'm not talking about praise. I'm talking about pure conversation. And challenge yourself today to think about what is prayer in your life. That's why I selected this song. It has nothing to do about gimme, gimme, gimme. It's about a recognition. It's a conversation. It's a thought about a dream. And even if you didn't understand the words, through the melody, you understand that beauty. And that conversation with God has to reflect the beauty that's in your life, the relationships that you have, the beauty that you experience every day, just waking up and looking up at the sky, looking at your children, looking at your parents, looking at people that you care about and seeing the expression of God in their faces. And if you can't do this, it's time to change that conversation. I know it's hard. People say, okay, sometimes they come up to me and say, that's beautiful, but you know, in life, I don't see the beauty there. You know, life is really rough. And that's where you need to change that conversation. From a conversation of give me to a conversation of acknowledgement, of being satisfied. Now, we talked about this a few weeks ago when we were approaching the whole idea of the genocide commemoration, of moving from victim to victor. It's very important to get into the mindset of a victor. That's what resurrection is all about. Victim is crucifixion. Resurrection is victor. Okay, you don't want to be in the victim category. The victim walks around with his hand out and saying, give me, give me, give me. The victor walks with his hand full and says, here you go, here you go, here you go. And now, I know, this is a difficult one, but it's a transition, and it means a state of mind change. It means the conversation needs to change. Listen to the song we just heard, Sare Sirun Yar. Even if you don't know what those words mean, and intentionally, I won't even tell you, because it's not important. But listen how it goes. Sare Sirun Yar. It is just the beauty of those words. The rhythm that is created by those words. That you need to latch on to. Not the sadness of give me, but the joy of here you go. Did you feel that? Then you've changed the conversation. And that's really important in the life of a Christian. That, I believe, is the foundation of what we call Armodoxy, in fact. Because when you look at the entire history of the Armenian people, I mean, here's a group of people sitting right at the crossroads of three different continents, and everybody's just been through this land, and they've had no military power, they've had no military strategy, and yet they are living. Based on what? Based on what? Being victims and saying, oh, too bad for us? Or being Sare Sirun Yar? Looking at it and acknowledging that here is a life. And I shared with you a few weeks ago that idea that even Gomidas Vartabed, who was creating so much of Armenian spiritual music at the time when nobody should have been talking about spiritual music. I mean, here is the destruction of a people, of a genocide. And here he is constructing, creating, putting together a fabric that keeps us afloat today, that gives us the spiritual energy that we need today. And there is a power in that. There is a power, and that's what we call Armodoxy here. That power needs to be tapped into, and it's applicable in all of your lives. It affects you differently when you can move from victim to victor. when you could stand there and you could say that, you know what, I am a victor. I celebrate the resurrection. That crucifixion is behind me. That's Good Friday news. I'm living Easter Sunday. And so I challenge you this week, as we're thinking about, you know, today is National Day of Prayer. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the national part of it. But for the prayer part, I challenge you, really look at your prayer life, to challenge yourselves not to think of God as the Superman or as the Santa Claus ready to fill the lists, but look at God as a partner. Look at God as a friend, as someone you converse with. Not expecting, but willing to share with, and giving of yourself. Well, we got a couple letters that I want to share with you. About last week's interview, remember Madeline McGrublian, young girl over at Williams College, taking on the task of remembering the Armenian genocide. Well, we heard from a couple listeners, had some interesting comments about it. Thought I'd share them with you and use them as a platform to move forward from where we're at right now. First comment came from Lynn in Connecticut. She writes, "Thanks for the interview with Madeline. That the Jewish students would take down the signs demonstrates two very important points. First, the Armenian genocide is not on the Holocaust remembrance agenda, and it should be. Everyone who talks about Holocaust should and must know the basics about the Armenian genocide. Second, there is still much work to do, even among allies. However, after hearing this interview, I also felt that the fight for genocide acknowledgement is in good hands. If this young lady is at Williams is any indication of what the next generation is all about, we should all breathe a sigh of relief. Her passion for justice could be heard in her voice. What enthusiasm for justice. Thanks again. Can we have more?" Absolutely. I wish we could have more, and definitely we will try to get more programming like that. It is difficult in a sense, but it isn't difficult because I know we have the talents out there, and certainly Madeline is a reflection of a generation that really has the ability to articulate, and definitely you felt it. Actually, Lynn, in your comments over there, I don't know if you picked it up or if it was intentional, but that's a major Armadoxy statement, that you felt the enthusiasm or her passion in her voice. Because isn't that what we always argue? It's not a question of understanding the words. It's understanding that feeling that comes across. And certainly with Madeline, you were able to pick up that feeling. And definitely, brave, brave young lady. The other points you make, Lynn, I do want to say this. Yes, I completely agree with you. We are talking about a super sensitive issue when we talk about the genocide. It is like no other, because it is a wrong that hasn't been corrected. And you can imagine this anytime in your life, with whatever difficulties you have, when you don't address them, when you don't take care of them, you hide them, you put them to one corner, what happens? They just fester. And that's what's happened with the Armenian genocide. Basically, this lack of recognition has allowed generations to grow, and it has festered among the people. And this is a big, big problem that we're confronting now, as generations have passed since the genocide, and the anger level, the frustration level is still there. The allies you speak about, definitely. I mean, come out here in Los Angeles. Would you believe that in Los Angeles there is a Museum of Tolerance? This is the name of it, the Museum of Tolerance. It's in West Hollywood, one of the suburbs of Los Angeles. And this was funded by government money, California state money, when Governor Duke Majan was the head of the state. And it was supposed to have a permanent exhibit for Armenian genocide. Would you believe here it is 20 years later, 15, 20 years later, And you go there, and there is not one word about the Armenian genocide at this Museum of Tolerance. It's all about the Holocaust. And I agree with you. You can't talk about Holocaust without talking about genocide. I mean, those words of Adolf Hitler should haunt anyone who studies history. Who, after all, remembers the annihilation of the Armenians? I mean, imagine that. The man is ready to walk into Poland. He's ready to kill the Jews, and he's being told, hey, you're not going to get away with this. There's no way the world is going to put up with you going in there into Poland. The world is not going to put up with you killing and destroying the Jewish people. And Hitler says, hey, hold off. Don't look too far away. Just 15 years ago, there was a genocide. 15 years ago, the Turks tried to take care of the Armenian problem. Just 15 years ago, the Turks tried to end the Armenian race, people. And you know what? 15 years later, who after all talks about them? Who after all speaks of the annihilation of the Armenian people? And the rest is history. Hitler goes into Poland, 6 million Jews later, a Holocaust. And people now talk about no connection. He found the validation. He found the nerve. He found, well, the authority in a sense, to go in and do what he did to the Jews because of what the Turks did to the Armenians. That should bother, that should irritate, that should wake up any civilized human being. And so you're right, yeah, we don't have, even among the allies, we don't have this acceptance. Until people can wake up, it's a long, long journey. Anyway, thank you, Lynn, for those comments. The second letter about this interview comes to us from Germany. And someone named Arlen writes, good interview. A question comes to my mind is, how an 18-year-old college student has concern for such matters. The story is about bravery. I am pleased to know young people in America stand up for what is right. Thank you, Arlen. Yes, you're absolutely right. People in America, we do stand up. It's not all about keeping up with the Kardashians. It's not all about playing Farmville or what Britney's wearing or whatever nonsense is out there. Yeah, that does clutter a lot of our lives. But there are some incredible people who are doing incredible things. And you got to meet one incredible young lady, and I know she has such a bright future ahead of her. That was Madeline McGrublian's interview. If you didn't catch it, it's last week's podcast, number 99. And while we are on that subject, let me tell you, I got a small little booklet. It's called The Incontestable Facts of the Armenian Genocide, 95th Anniversary. It is a small little paperback that you could stick in your pocket, 64 pages in all. I guess 68 pages, considering the covers are more like pages, too. All kinds of neat stuff in there. Some articles, some commentary, some facts. Love to give this away. I got, let's see, about 20 copies here. How about we give away the first 15? First 15 emails that we receive at feedback@epostle.net. And we'll put a time limit, too, because these podcasts stay on the internet forever. Just the other day, somebody wrote to me and commented about a podcast we did during the first year about a Beethoven symphony. And I had to look back and see, what were we talking about? Yes, these are unlike radio shows that are here today and gone within a second. These podcasts remain in the virtual stratosphere forever. So let's say until May 9th, this Sunday, Mother's Day, 2010. First 15 emails we get at feedback@epostle.net. Just drop us your address in the subject line. Let's put in Armenian Genocide Booklet, and I'll be happy to mail you a copy of this. And speaking of bright futures, yes, this music can only mean one thing. The harpist is moving into the studio, and Ani is ready to give us her bubbles. Ani's excited today. Just announced an engagement. Congratulations. Here is the bubble for today.
Today's spiritual bubble is a prayer by Bernard of Clairvaux. Let me hold fast to you, beautiful Lord, whom the angels themselves yearn to look upon. Wherever you go, I will follow you. If you pass through fire, I will not flinch, for I fear no evil when you are with me. You carry my griefs, because you grieve for my sake. You pass through the narrow doorway from death to life to make it wide enough for all to follow. Nothing can ever now separate me from your love. This has been your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven.
Thank you, Ani, for that beautiful prayer. You know, much like the soap bubbles that go up into the sky and you watch them hover up and go beyond the trees, so do Ani's bubbles are here for our imagination, just to float off for a little bit, to just think. And I know this prayer did that for me. This is a beautiful prayer, and it's very appropriate today, of course, National Day of Prayer that we're looking at. I want to continue on that whole thing, but take a look at this whole idea of national prayer. What is that supposed to mean? What is this day of prayer? Well, in a sense, it's a good idea. It makes us focus. It allows us to think about that there is a special day. And there's nothing wrong with having these nice little days. It's kind of cute, too. But, of course, for a Christian, this dialogue, this conversation with God should be a continuous one, not limited to one day, not limited by any calendar or any watch. And this is really, I think, maybe my biggest objection to these kind of days of prayer, because it gets people in that mindset that, okay, here we have a day and you come and you pray. It's much like the Sunday gig, isn't it? We go to church on Sunday, and then you could do whatever you want on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Sort of get your act together Thursday and Friday, and by Saturday start repenting so you can start all over again. It's not about winding up God one day a week, but allowing God to be real in your life every single day. And I know the whole intention of the National Day of Prayer is not about just saying, okay, one day a year we're going to remember God. It's the idea that by remembering, you can allow him to be part of your life all the time. But I guess the bigger problem I have is it stems from an incident that took place just 6 years ago in my life. But it also accented the political nature of such events. And this took place in Glendale. When I was just assigned to Glendale, the mayor had a prayer breakfast on this Thursday, on the National Day of Prayer. And he had invited as a speaker, this is a citywide event where all the clergy were invited, as well as city officials, for this Day of Prayer breakfast. He had invited as the speaker Kenneth Starr. If I know, we got some young people there listening. You may not remember way back in last century, but towards the end of last century, during the Clinton administration, Ken Starr was the prosecutor, the one who really hounded Clinton and brought him down. Basically a very divisive man, somebody who, well, he did what he had to because of politics. Now, I'm not going to argue the politics of it. Whether I'm on his side, I'm on the other side, is irrelevant. But how could you bring somebody like that to be the key speaker of a National Day of Prayer or a citywide prayer meeting, prayer breakfast? And I guess I take offense because wherever you look at these prayer breakfasts, these prayer meetings on this national day, it's always accented by some political figure. And you know, politics is politics. It gets the job done. It provides for the funding. But you got to remember that prayer is beyond the politics. I mean, isn't that where we have some problem? What do they tell you at cocktail parties? You know, stay away from politics and religion. Isn't that interesting that it's these two divisive areas that come together on the National Day of Prayer? It's very interesting, isn't it? Because even this morning, you see the president with his cabinet, with his people, getting together and praying. Okay, again, something you wind up once a year and then forget it the next day? I mean, these same people that are praying, are they building, are they working toward the peace that we deserve in the world? And these are just questions, sure, hypothetical, but, you know, they strike home. Because a little incident happened just a few days ago. We invited Stepan Partamian. Now, this is a name I'm throwing out there. Some of our Armenian listeners will get it. Stepan Partamian is an avowed atheist. He's written a book recently about Armenians in America, their contributions to America. And it's actually a very nice little reference book. You know, it's not a novel, it's not Pulitzer Prize material, but it's a very nice reference material. And when I saw it, I thought, this would be great. We have a decent Armenian community that's struggling with issues of acclimation, struggling with issues of assimilation here in the American community. Glendale, if you don't know, is a very, is filled with a lot of Armenians that have recently immigrated to the United States. So there are issues of acclimation. And I thought this would be really wonderful to show what Armenians have contributed and done in America. So I invited Stepan to come and be a speaker at our church. Would you believe I started receiving email from people saying, how could you allow this atheist to come and speak at your church? Interesting idea. Well, I guess they would have a point if I invited him to come and speak from the pulpit. They would have a point if I asked him to come and speak about theology. But he's coming here to talk about a book about Armenians, how they acclimated to America, their contributions to this great country. Nothing in there about God. And you know what's interesting about it is that, again, we get to this whole political issue again. What difference does it make when we're talking about these things? I mean, why aren't we separating these things? Church and state should be separated. And yet we come to a national day of prayer where it's brought together. I don't know if I'm getting this across clearly, but it's very clear in my mind. There's some major hypocrisy here, too. You know, people are all so scared. I mean, their faith must be so fragile that they'd be scared that somebody could come and talk about, you know, a relatively secular subject. And then somehow they would destroy their faith because he happens to be an atheist. And Stepan makes a very good point. He says you buy electricity from a company. The church buys electricity, phone service from people who aren't Christian. And when you think about it, most of the people coming into your church are probably away from the Christian ideals. And so it forces the issue to really say, well, where does an atheist belong? Where should an atheist be? What other building should open its door to an atheist but a church? I think that's wild. I think that's wild that an atheist is coming into a church and talking. And I think that we've got to allow ourselves this openness. We can't be scared. We have to be convinced of our faith. Not to be scared that it could be whisked away because of the thought, because of an expression of one person. But the challenge that an atheist gives us is not a challenge to convert, but a challenge to strengthen our resolve to our faith, to the emotions that bind us, that bring us together, and find the beauty that is God-given in every person. National Day of Prayer, that's what it does for me. It gives me a chance to look at it, see some of the hypocrisy, see some of the stupidity, and realize that that prayer is a very special conversation that I have with my Creator, with the essence of love, with the fountain of love, and realize that that love has to reach out. It has to go beyond me, and as Bernard Clairvaux said so beautifully, so eloquently, there is nothing that can ever separate me from that love. Okay, we waited a little bit too long, but here is Susie with a very important announcement.
Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now entering the third year of production and growing daily with new listeners around the globe. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. Epostle.net is the voice of Armadoxy, committed to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we need to avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at the In His Shoes website. This is Susie, thanking you for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Aren't you just amazed? How do we do it? We bring in the pianist, the harpist, got all these people in this studio, and Ken looking at us, trying to put it all together. Oh, what a team over here. Anyway, thank you, Susie, for that reminder. And I want to join her in telling you, you know, we're doing some incredible stuff through Epostle.net. And it's because of your prayers and it's because of your support. Please keep us first and foremost in all that you do. I know you're a different group of people. You do give. Your charitable contributions are appreciated all over. Please remember Epostle. Did you catch us last night? You know, we are also doing a once a week, Wednesday evenings, we go live. We do a Questions of Faith show every Wednesday evening at epostle.net/broadcasts.html. Check it out. Just press on the broadcast tab. I mean, every Wednesday night you get a Bible study, and what's neat about it is it's live. You could contribute in there. You could participate in there. You could give your thoughts there, ask questions, and that is just remarkable. We're doing that every Wednesday evening as part of a series of Bible studies, and the other neat thing about it is that, well, you know, because we're in the Pacific time zone, most of the world is asleep while we're doing that. So they are archived. You can go there and you can check out all of the Bible studies we've done, download them, watch them, bring together a few friends and watch it together, and then spark a conversation, a dialogue with one another. It's just a fantastic way of bringing Armadoxy into your homes. And it's all done because of your donations. And those donations go a long way. They support this ministry. They allow us, well, to, well, resurrect a lot of the equipment that we have. And we do need donations on a regular basis. So please make this a part of your giving, a part of your contributions to charity. I know you're very generous. I know the kind of people that listen to the Next Step. Please make a check out and send it to the Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center, 632 West Stocker Street, Glendale, 91202. Or as Susie said, the easiest way is just go on our website and press on the donate button. It all comes to the same place and it all says sends the same message. It tells us that you want to be a partner. You're interested in this ministry that's reaching out virtually just to all sides of the world. And it's a blessing. I know it's a blessing from the responses that I'm getting, and I'm comforted to know that we are reaching out in places that I would never have imagined just a few years ago that we would have had the possibility of getting out to those areas. So thank you for being with us. Keep us in your prayers. Keep us at the front of your prayer life, because, you know, this is an important ministry as far as the world goes, too. I think that Armenian Orthodoxy has such a profound message that needs to be heard. I mean, here's a group of people, like I said a few minutes ago, no military power, no weapons, and yet they've survived, not only survived, but they're creating. They're continuing to prosper. They're continuing to enjoy. And this may be the key to peace. How do you bring about peace in the world? You don't bring it about by killing people. You don't bring it about by weapons. You bring it about by love. Can we tap into that power of love? Is there a power out there? We're exploring it. We're doing it together. We're presenting a very sincere, a very bottom line theology built on the words of Jesus Christ. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one goes to the Father but by me, is the expression of love. Love is the way, the truth, and the life. No one attains that peace, that ultimate reconciliation, except through the route of love. Well, for the final segment of today's show, I wanted to talk about the Old Boys Club. And this is an interesting idea that came to my head as I was telling you. I was sitting through, well, we call it the necessary evil. I think I shared this with you a few times, but I don't mind telling you again that my life has really taken all kinds of tosses and turns and ups and downs in through the 30 years of ministry, through the 30 years of being a priest. But just a few years ago, I came to the acceptance that, you know, all jobs have some difficulties with them. And when you turn it into a job, you accept those difficulties. When you look at it as a passion, as your calling, those difficulties aren't there. They are part of the equation, right? But when it's a job, those difficulties are definitely there. So there is a part of my ministry that is a job, and there are difficulties. And I've resigned to the fact that if I could get away with limiting those to 30% of my time, I'm content having 70% to do the things that I want to. And hence was born Apostle, hence was born In His Shoes. The whole idea that we are reaching out. We're doing it because we're putting up with some of that 30% stuff. Well, part of that 30% comes together at the beginning of May when we have to go to this assembly. And basically a bunch of people that sit around and talk about, well, different changes that are necessary. I don't want to say they're unnecessary, because living in America, you know that you have bylaws, you have rules, and they have to be done. And somehow you sit there and you go through this necessary evil. And as I was sitting through the clergy conference last week, I just looked around and I said, thought to myself, you know, there is an extra added dimension when it comes to the Armenian Church of being run by not just a boys club, but being run by an Armenian boys club. That is, these men that are running the church happen to also be Armenian men. Men who have all of the trappings, all of the difficulties, all of the extra baggage that has come from growing up in the Middle East, growing up as Armenian men. And this, you know, don't want to point fingers. I'm part of the problem as much as I hope to be part of the solution. When you look at where we're going with this whole thing, you need to be able to deal with that aspect as well. For instance, we have a tradition of washing the feet of the congregation, the priest, the highest ranking clergyman in a church. We'll kneel down on Holy Thursday in remembrance of Jesus' act of humility, of Christ kneeling down in front of his disciples and washing their dirty feet and showing that he, as Lord and Creator, is doing such a humble job as to wash the feet of the disciples, how much more we as brothers and sisters must care and have compassion towards one another, including to the point of caring for their physical needs, especially their physical needs. And so in this expression, the priest or the senior clergyman comes down on his knees and washes the feet of the people. This is what the rubrics in the church books say, that the priest is supposed to wash the people from the oldest to the youngest. well, this is fine, except it has turned politically into this little contest of finding the most clean feet, finding 12 young men who can sit up at the altar in their nice shirts. And of course, this is not what is prescribed by the church fathers. This is something that has turned into tradition. It looks cute. It looks cute to see these young boys sitting up there and the priest coming down on his knees and washing their feet. And you know what? There is a cute factor. You can do that. But that's not what this is all about. The intention of this is to emphasize that we are all in this relationship with one another, interdependent on one another. And one of the things that I've been doing in my church, I follow the rubrics. I come down on my knees and wash the feet of anyone who comes up. And in that group are, of course, women are young girls. And this is unheard of in many of the churches. Unheard of. What are you talking about? This is supposed to be the boys' day. Jesus washed the feet of his disciples. They were all men. And therefore, you should get 12 men and wash their feet. Well, here's the problem with that. First of all, the book doesn't say that. The book says wash all of the feet. And why does it say that? Because you know what? If there were 14 men in that room, Jesus would have certainly washed all 14 feet. He wouldn't have said, okay, let's hold off at 12. You other two go stand in the corner. You know what? If there were women in the room, Jesus would have knelt down and washed their feet as well to show the humility, to show the need for service to one another. The reason why we do 12 feet, or the tradition has become to do 12 feet, is because that's how many people were in the room. That's it. There's no magic to that. So one of the priests gets up the other day at this meeting and he says, well, I've never heard of. I've gone to Orthodox Catholic churches and no priest ever washes the feet of women. And I'm listening to this and I'm going, wow. You know, it's not only a reflection of what men can do to the church. It's also a reflection of the Middle Eastern mindset. And the reality is that, well, the Armenian church, Armenian Orthodoxy, evolved in a Middle Eastern culture. And so you've got to bring into play many of the factors that the Middle East brings, especially gender differences and recognition of those gender differences. And that's a difficult one, especially when we sit here in America and try to sift through and feel like, what did Jesus really want to say? What was Jesus really saying? And I'm bringing this up because, you know, this is really what we're doing here. Through the next step. We're taking the next step. Well, what does that mean? We're taking the next step and really trying to sift it all out and find out what is the essence of the faith that we call Christianity. Sure, we look at this model, Armenian Orthodoxy, but it has been influenced by unique sets of circumstances. It has been influenced by a Middle Eastern upbringing. Can we sift through all that and really find out what did Jesus want to accomplish? What did he really have to say to us? And here's a beautiful case. Here's a beautiful case that we can look at. It serves as an example. Okay, what was the intent of the feet washing? Was it to say that, well, men are superior to women, therefore the Christ will kneel down and wash the feet of 12 men? Or was the intention of this act of humility to show that he, as master, was willing to wash the feet of his servants? How much more we, as brothers and sisters of one another, need to reach out to each other? And obviously, the rhetorical question is answered, right? It's a question of understanding, where is compassion, where is the love that God places in our hearts. Well, we are at the end of another podcast, the 100th episode of The Next Step. And God willing, if all goes well, we'll be here again next week to do episode number 101. I believe that's a prime, isn't it? Well, it is a beautiful number. It reads the same backwards and forwards, and I love those kind of things. It's very binary, you know? Anyway, I'm getting carried away. I know, I always do that, don't I? Whenever it comes to numbers. Hey, it's Mother's Day weekend. Want to take an opportunity to wish all of our mothers all of the best. If you have a mother, take the time. Call her up. Mother's Day is the number one day for phone calls. You know what Father's Day is? Number one day for collect phone calls. True story. Ask AT&T. Call your mother. If you can, get out there and see her. Take her out. Spend some time with her. If your mother's no longer with us, take some time to remember and relish the memory. That is a beautiful memory that they leave. If you've had some difficulties with mothers, time to make up. Time to kiss them and love them because they are very, very special people. We'll be back next week with another special edition of The Next Step as it falls right on Ascension Day, 40 days after Easter. We'll be looking at the story of the Ascension and what it means in your life. In the meantime, please join us at epostle.net. That's Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe. You'll find over there all of our podcasts. We put together some great shows, especially during the Easter season, and they are archived over there, so you could take a 40-day trip through the Lenten journey even when it's not Lent. Also at epostle.net, you'll find our Wednesday Questions in Faith series. Join us Wednesday evening when we go live to the world and bring in your questions, your comments, as we explore different articles of faith. Meanwhile, please keep us in your prayers. It's those prayers that keep us going, and they're very important to this ministry. We pray for you. Please pray for us and bring your participation to inhisshoes.org as well as epostle.net. Hey, it is fantastic to be here with you. Remember, if you're going to play the lottery, remember what I told you, the secret hint I gave you at the beginning. Steve Wozniak plays 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And if you hit it big, please don't forget us. Please don't forget us. And remember, I gave you the hint. Hey, listen, for all the wonderful people who have consistently, for the last 100 weeks, religiously brought you The Next Step every single week. For Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer up in the booth, for Ani with her bubbles, for Vadojan with this beautiful theme song, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week where we will take The Next Step.
Trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.